Welcome to the Intelligence Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Eric White. The impeachment case has brought forward many questions about whistleblowers, inspectors general, relations with Congress, and independence. A few days back, a group of former intelligence community IGs posted a letter at the Project of Government Oversight to Congress expressing the IG's support for the whistleblower process. Federal News Network's Nicola Grisco caught up with one of the signatories, former National Reconnaissance Office Inspector General Eric Feldman.
I wonder if you might have an example, especially looking at your career with the National Reconnaissance Office, of the independence versus collaboration conflict.
Well, I'll tell you, the IG statute requires inspectors general, when they identify potential violations of federal criminal law, that they have to make a disclosure of that to the Department of Justice under normal circumstances. And this is a little bit different from the whistleblower protections within the intelligence community, which I can describe in a minute. As you can imagine, there's a little bit of tension surrounding that. And the first time I had to make a disclosure to the Department of Justice, the general counsel of my agency was not happy and felt that given his role as the general counsel, it was his job to coordinate anything that comes out of the agency and goes to the Justice Department. And that just isn't the case. So there was quite a lot of tension surrounding that as to who did I really work for. I had another instance going back a few years at the Defense Intelligence Agency, where we were doing a review of a particular intelligence asset, an aircraft, which I can say, overseas. And we found instances where, let's say that aircraft was not being used for its intended purposes. And there may have been some personal use of that aircraft. I was called to testify in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee to give them the results of that review, which they had requested. I provided the results, the facts, as they were. And before I even got back to my office, I was summoned into the director's office and read the Riot Act and asked, what did you tell them? In a rather threatening voice. And when three-star generals speak loudly at you, you tend to listen. And I was a much younger man at the time, and I frankly was a bit intimidated. And I had to think quickly on my feet to figure out how to respond to that. What did I tell them? And my answer was, I told them the truth. What else would you suggest I should have done? And that completely diffused the situation, because when it comes down to it, either you're going to tell the truth to the oversight committees that have a right to the truth, or you're going to lie. And there really is not much gray area in between.
But I wonder, from your perspective, what is different about disclosing something, being a whistleblower, perhaps in the intelligence community, as compared to someone else at another agency?
Well, first of all, in all the agencies, whistleblowers, someone who identifies themselves and who the inspector general identifies as a whistleblower, has certain protections under various statutes. In the intelligence community, it's even more critical that we protect whistleblowers. So the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act was put into place to prevent exactly what we saw with individuals like Edward Snowden. There are some that view Edward Snowden as a whistleblower and a hero, and I'm not going to get into the politics of whether, you know, he should be considered a hero or not. But in my view, he was not a whistleblower, because if he, in fact, wanted to share information about what he believed to be inappropriate activity on the part of intelligence professionals at the NSA, he could have availed himself of that whistleblower protection by going to the NSA inspector general, who I knew very well and was an individual of the highest integrity, and that process would have kicked in. And all of the classified information that he felt he needed to share in order to prove his point would have been kept in the appropriate channels with appropriate clear people and would not have put our national security at risk. Ultimately, Snowden decided that he was going to release classified information to journalists instead of going the appropriate route and protecting it. So in the intelligence community, we want to encourage people who have concerns to go within the process that's been established to protect our information and protect our national security. The way the Whistleblower Protection Act works, and we've seen this played out in recent weeks, is this. Individual goes to the inspector general and says, I have a matter of urgent concern that I feel I need to share. The IG then has 14 days to determine if the concern that's been raised falls within the definitions in the statute of an urgent and credible concern that needs to be shared with the Congress. In this particular case that we've been reading about, the Inspector General for the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, got a concern. He investigated. He concluded within the 14-day statutory time frame that the concern was both urgent and credible under the statute. So the next phase of that is he shared that, got it ready for transmittal to the oversight committees, and sent it to the head of the agency, which in this case was the acting director of national intelligence. The acting DNI, or the head of an agency under the whistleblower protection provisions, has 7 days to transmit that concern to the chairman and ranking member of both oversight committees. That is the agency head's only role, only responsibility, is to transmit that urgent and credible concern to the Hill. And in this case, the acting director of national intelligence decided not to do that, to do a bunch of other things, which we've read about, which is contrary to the statute. The other things we've been hearing about is that the whistleblower really isn't a whistleblower because he did not have firsthand knowledge of the telephone conversation. He was not on the phone. Well, that is a huge fallacy about what whistleblowers are all about, because you need whistleblowers who have knowledge of a concern, maybe suspect something is going on, maybe have heard from others that there is something going on, and you want them to raise that issue within the classified channels and have the appropriate people investigate to determine whether or not what they believe to be true is true. If we required every whistleblower to have absolute first-hand knowledge that anything that they raise, you know, has to be first-hand knowledge and the absolute truth, and you have to have evidence, we wouldn't have any whistleblowers. And the IGs wouldn't have the opportunity to help protect their agencies by doing an investigation and determining whether the allegations were credible. The other piece is the identity of the whistleblower. We cannot in any way, shape, or form compromise the anonymity of a whistleblower who has requested anonymity under the Act, or else we will never get people to come forward. That is absolutely critical to the process. And I've heard arguments this week that the whistleblower is a material witness and would have to testify. Not true. In this particular case, the whistleblower was the one that came forward with knowledge of the conversation that occurred, and transcripts were provided to the public. The material facts are in the transcripts, not in the whistleblower's account of how he heard about that phone call having taken place. So there's a lot of misinformation that is swirling out there about this case, but also the process and role and the important role that whistleblowers play throughout the federal government, but particularly in the intelligence community, in order to protect the information that we're all working with.
Eric Feldman is former National Reconnaissance Office Inspector General, speaking with Federal News Network's Nicola Grisco. We'll have more of this interview after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
From idea to reality, innovation is at the heart of mission success. At Leidos, we're helping our customers transform vast amounts of data into actionable intelligence. Leidos is number one on the Washington Technology Top 100, bringing unrivaled talent to bear on the intelligence community's critical missions through our data analytics, all-source analysis, linguistics, agile and SecDevOps, and advanced AI/ML that allows you to see the full picture faster. At Leidos, the important work never stops. Visit leidos.com/intel to learn how.
We continue our interview with Eric Feldman, former National Reconnaissance Office Inspector General. He's speaking with Federal News Network's Nicola Grisco.
So it seems like to me, if you want to encourage people to come forward, to blow the whistle, to make some sort of disclosure, they have to be able to trust the process. They have to be able to trust that all of those steps that you just mentioned, that they will occur, you know, as you described. Was that kind of your concern in signing on to this letter, that you and some of your former colleagues from the ICIG community wrote a couple days ago about, you know, everything that's been going on?
Yes, that's absolutely the concern that we had. Because if there's no credibility in either the process itself or those who we entrust to execute that process, namely the IG, the agency head, the oversight committees, if there's a lack of trust in that, you're going to increase the risk of having another Edward Snowden. Because why should I trust the process if politicians are going to berate me, try to find out who I am, tell people to potentially hurt me? And so credibility is a critically important piece. That's why within the IG community as a whole, having inspectors general and IG staffs who are of high integrity, well-trained, professional, and know their jobs and know what they're doing and are objective in doing the work that they do, that is critical to encouraging people to come up and say, hey, this just isn't right.
You know, I wonder, throughout your career as an inspector general, have you seen more career employees begin to understand this whistleblowing process, understand the protections that they have, understand that the role that, for example, your colleagues in the IG office, that they play in all of this? I mean, I've heard other IGs speak about how, from their perspective, they felt like more training and more awareness was helping sort of this trust aspect that we've been talking about with the whistleblowing process. But I wonder, from your perspective throughout your career, if that's something that you noticed, or if it was still a challenge to communicate to employees exactly what their protections were and exactly what this process meant for them.
You know, it all depended on the tone at the top. And we talk about that a lot in private industry, about the tone at the top creating the corporate ethical culture of a company. And in government, it really is no different. I have been in situations where the tone at the top is so mission-driven that the message being sent to the workforce is, we're going to achieve this mission no matter what we have to do to achieve it. And there is no overt statement that it's okay to break the rules or to cut corners or to play in the gray area. But that is the implicit understanding of the employees. And in those kinds of environments, it's very difficult to get the hearts and minds of employees thinking that they need to protect the organization when they're being pressured from a performance perspective to get things done no matter what. There have been other times in my career where I've had heads of agencies and senior leadership who are straight as an arrow, who believe firmly in the role of oversight and understand that if we can't clean our own house, someone from the outside is going to do it for us. And so they, as leaders, reinforce the message that the IG puts out there. They demonstrate that they listen to the IG. They do everything they can do to make the IG look good and effective by implementing the IG's recommendations and, you know, publicly even thanking the IG for doing a particular review. That's where the workforce gets hooked and they say, yeah, you know, this is part of the process and it is part of getting our mission done, making sure we do it the right way. So it all depends on the leadership in each agency. And I've been in different situations. We do a lot within the IG community of training and taking actual cases of investigative cases, fraud cases, maybe even audits that have been done, and trying to use those as real life examples to the workforce, not only as a deterrent to doing bad things, but also to instruct them about what some of the red flags might be and real things that do go on that they should look for. And if they see these things, that it is in the best interest of the agency for them to come forward so we can resolve them quickly. It is such a critical piece of what's going on right now. And I saw yesterday, I believe it was, where over 90 former intelligence officers and senior leaders of intelligence agencies came out with a similar defense of the whistleblower protection provisions and the need to ensure that the process continues to have integrity. And I was very happy to see that. And I think that shows just how many leaders within these agencies truly believe in integrity in government. And that's very hopeful to me.
That's Eric Feldman, former National Reconnaissance Office Inspector General, speaking with Federal News Network's Nicola Grisco. Hear part three of our interview after one more quick break. I'm Eric White.
From idea to reality, innovation is at the heart of mission success. At Leidos, we're helping our customers transform vast amounts of data into actionable intelligence. Leidos is number one on the Washington Technology Top 100, bringing unrivaled talent to bear on the intelligence community's critical missions through our data analytics, all-source analysis, linguistics, agile and SecDevOps, and advanced AI/ML that allows you to see the full picture faster. At Leidos, the important work never stops. Visit leidos.com/intel to learn how.
Our third and final part of our interview with Eric Feldman, former National Reconnaissance Office Inspector General. He spoke with Federal News Network's Nicola Grisco.
I noticed that you had a long career working for multiple agencies, either in an inspector's general office or as the IG, you know, yourself. And, you know, I'd be curious from your perspective whether there were, you know, commonalities that you found as you traveled to different agencies throughout your career. Were there common recommendations, common challenges that you kept seeing as you went from place to place?
Sure. Yeah, there certainly were. So I started my career at the Government Accountability Office. So I've been in oversight from the very beginning of a 32-year career of federal service. Retired in 2011. And my first IG experience was with the DOD Inspector General and then over to the intelligence side at the Defense Intelligence Agency, IG's office, then as a CIA employee in the CIA IG's office in various capacities, and then over to the National Reconnaissance Office, which is, a lot of people don't realize, is the spy satellite agency that is principally staffed with CIA civilians and Air Force officers and military, uniformed military throughout the NRO. So in these IG offices, the common challenges for someone working in an IG role is that you are asked to be independent both in approach and in spirit within an agency where you're still an employee of that agency. And there's built-in tension in the IG Act of 1978, which created the IGs. It was created later for the intelligence community because of a lot of objections back in 78. But the principal tension is that the IG works for the director of the agency on a day-to-day basis, but is appointed by the Congress and can be removed by the Congress and has dual reporting responsibilities to congressional oversight committees. So the thing that I learned is that the relationships are an art rather than a science. And I say this a lot. I've said it a lot in my federal career, and now that I look at corporate compliance programs for a living, I say it there, that collaboration and independence are not mutually exclusive, that you can be independent in every way but still collaborate with the agency that you're working in and dedicate yourself to improving the effectiveness of their mission. Sometimes you have to do that with some tough love through investigations and through some tough reporting. Other times you may be helping the head of the agency ferret out fraud, waste, and abuse that could be occurring within the organization. So that's one of the principal challenges. One of the common themes that I have seen throughout my federal career, and I see it now in the private sector, is the whole concept of working with contractors and procurement. That, in my view, is one of the most vulnerable areas of every federal agency, and that is in the identification of the requirements for contractors, the execution of the selection process, the actual implementation of the contract, and then the closeout of the contract. Every phase of that process is vulnerable to all kinds of collusion, conflict of interest, and fraud. And throughout my career, I've seen lots of different permutations of that at various levels.
You've been listening to our interview with Eric Feldman, former National Reconnaissance Office Inspector General. He spoke with Federal News Network's Nicola Grisco. If you missed any part of this interview, you can find it online. Head to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Agency in Focus. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligence Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.